Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Best Show Ever Pod, the podcast where we interview people about the best concert they ever saw in their life. And this episode is a great one. We have got the CEO of Osiris Podcast, the guy who gave me the job. RJB is our interviewee for this episode. We go over some really cool fish shows, obviously. We go over my favorite fish show of all time, the one that I've listened to probably the most. And so that was a treat for me. I hope it's a treat for you guys as well. We get into some Osiris stuff. We talk about his journey with that. Overall, just a great conversation with RJ. If you need another podcast episode with RJ on it, I've got you. Here it is. But enough intro from me. Let's get into this conversation with RJ. But first, a little bit of music from none other than Jesus and Fartfinger.
But first, a short break.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
This is the best show ever. This is the best show ever. This is the best show.
Best show I ever heard.
I think I'd have to agree.
Ever. Yeah.
Leave meeting. I'm out of here.
See you later. It was fun.
I'm not letting you record me, RJ. I don't know what I'm going to say.
It was really fun while it lasted, though. We had a good time, you know?
Yeah, it was nice. We'll catch up, and then that's it. You got your dead shirt on today, though. Same.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, show my appreciation.
Keep the party going.
Yeah. Although I missed the whole, like, Dead & Company tour this year. I think I went last year, but I didn't see any shows this year.
Was that something that you made a point to hit when it came around, or?
They came through Philly and we like got tickets through Live Nation and I was like, all right, let's go. So I guess, no, I guess it was just like, it just happened. I mean, I've seen like so many iterations of this group of people over the past 20 years, you know, it's like since like the late 90s, you know? So I don't know. I think maybe I'm in the minority there though.
In the minority of people who haven't made a point to see him a ton, because I also didn't make a point to see him a ton. It would kind of be like last minute, like, oh, okay, sweet. Let's go see Dead & Company.
Yeah. I mean, I just think like I saw them last summer. I've seen them like three or four times this, like, you know, this iteration. And so I think that was like enough, maybe four times. Maybe it was whatever I saw was, I was like, cool. That was good. You know? So I don't know. Maybe I'm going to come to regret it. Maybe on my deathbed, I'm going to be like, I can't believe I didn't go to that final tour. You never know.
you're going to see the cool, pro shot version of this last weekend and be like, man.
Yep.
Could have been there, dude.
Could have been there. Should have just went on tour. You know, that's the moral of life. Should have just gone on tour, you know?
Should have just gone on tour is that should be a t-shirt that I wear when I'm at home on the couch.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go ahead and trademark that right now. Should have just gone on tour.
Man, well, what are you up to, Cam?
Long weekend, seeing Dead & Co. Now it's back to real life. And I got a little gap until I see some shows next, but yeah, we're going to do a little bit of fall tour for Fish, and we're going to do, I'm doing Disco Biscuits next week, actually. So never mind. Not that big of a gap.
That is awesome. That will
be a 5-day gap here.
That will be fantastic. They're playing great right now. They have great crowds. They're doing great.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like it's at the Roxy here in LA, and so that's a cool venue I haven't been able to check out. And I mean, I've hit a lot of the big venues in LA, like the Greek Theaters and the you know, Forum and Hollywood Bowl and stuff. But getting to go to shows at places like the Troubadour and, you know, the Roxy or like the Viper Room, those are cool spots that, you know, are still around. So excited for that. Have you done any LA stuff? Have you been like to California?
I was out there for a conference last March, and I saw Ghostlight at the Troubadour like last minute. And it was fun. It was the only time I've ever been to that venue. And I saw this band at what, there's like a venue, like small venue in Silver Lake that's like famous. Like a little, it's like a little hole in the wall kind of club. I saw Geese. Do you remember that like indie band? Have you heard of them?
No. I know Goose.
Yeah. They're like that, but different, but much, much different. They're like a heavy indie rock band from New York. And they were playing there. And, so I saw two shows in two nights in LA without planning to at all beforehand. So.
LA is a lot, but it's good for shows. It is good for like a cheap last minute show. Like I got to do Dogs in a Pile at the Mint, and like, mm-hmm. I didn't know what the Mint was. Mm-hmm. It's like this old bar that's been there for a long time. So, I mean that, yeah, there's always cool little last minute shows going on. And for some reason, the jam band scene is just not as fleshed out and huge as it is on the East Coast. I mean, you can get tickets last minute to even Fish if you wanted to out here. Which was a surprise to me. I was
crazy.
And it seems like every show I go to, it's a bunch of East Coast people at the show who flew out because the tickets were cheap.
Yeah. Man,
like Berkeley Fish was all East Coast people, Hollywood Bowl Fish, all East Coast people around us. I was like, okay,
yeah, I think that's kind of how it goes.
I see what's going on. Yeah, and I can't probably ever move to the East Coast because I won't be able to get tickets to anything. So that's why I'm staying out here.
Makes sense. It makes sense. It's better to do that. Just make sure you can go to the shows. That's all that matters.
Right. That's a priority number one.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into your best show ever, and some of your best shows ever, I like to do a little first show and worst show with you. So what's the first show you ever saw, and also the worst show?
I think the first show I ever saw, actually, my brother took me to see the Nine Inch Nails at the Toledo Sports Arena. And I'm just going to look it up because I wonder what year it was. I think it was probably 1993.
Early Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. Maybe it was 95. Could have been 95, which would have made me 16. But I think I still...
Man.
I remember being extremely like freaked out and like coming home and like my ears were ringing and I was like, wow, that was wild. So I think that was my first.
Were you into the heavier sort of scene then, or was that your brother taking you to the show that you wanted to see?
Yeah, I did. I mean, like, I think in early 95, I was still listening to, you know, Nirvana and grunge stuff. And I don't think I was like a Nine Inch Nails fan, but I think my brother was like, you're coming to the show with me. And my parents didn't care what we did. So like, they were like, they didn't really have a say in it. So yeah. It's kind of wild to think about at this point.
Especially the name of that band to a parent in the 90s or a parent anytime. Like, what's it? Nine Inch Nails?
Yeah.
No. You it's can like go see the fish thing.
They sing about fucking people like animals. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. And I'm 16 normal. And I'm impressionable. So that's good.
Yeah. Totally fine. The
how
worst
was that,
show.
How was that show though?
Well, it was crazy. And I remember the Jim Rose Circus, which is like this circus kind of like was like opened up for them. I mean, it was just like a weird first concert experience. I feel like, you know, a lot of people I know of my age went to like see Chicago with their parents or like saw Bruce Springsteen or some people like saw the Dead with their parents. Like this was not normal. This was a really strange. And sorry, I was jumping to the worst show because it just came into my mind and it's weird because I really like this band, but I went to, it must have been like 2013 or so. I went to MSG to see Fish over New Year's, like maybe the 28th and 29th. And then I saw the Drive-By Truckers at the 930 Club on December 30th. I want to say it was like 2012, 2013. And nobody in the whole venue was like moving at all. Like everyone was just kind of standing still, like watching the band. And my wife and I tried to like get some, you know, it was just like a very dead crowd and like not a great atmosphere. And I really liked that band, but I think it was disappointing because we were like, why is everyone just standing here staring at them? Why like there's nobody even like pumping their fists or like, you know, singing along. Everyone was just sort of like staring.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you do as the band? Like, you're just doing your set. Like you're just getting through your, like, what are we supposed to do here? Want me to do a cartwheel?
I know. And I was thinking about, we were trying to figure out if we should like do some cartwheels, you know, or try to like rush the stage, you know? I think it was 2012. I wonder if people who went to that show who are big fans liked that show, but it wasn't the band's fault, you know?
I'm sure there were some people there that night that was their best show. There were some people who were like, finally, everyone's just relaxed and watching the show, leaving me alone, quiet.
Yeah.
Some people really don't like it when people sing at shows and dance at shows. And so I'm sure there's a couple people in the crowd that were loving it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I've seen a lot of shows, you know, there's been a lot, been a hell of a lot of shows.
I know. And it's hard to pick a best, I'm sure, for you. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to pick a best for me. And I think you've got me on shows. I'm pretty sure. Do you have honorable mentions that you would be just remiss if you didn't bring up on this podcast?
Well, I hope you don't mind that I'm kind of going to like, subvert the premise of your show just briefly by saying I have a lot of non-Fish honorable mentions, you know, great shows that I've seen, but if you wanted that, you're going to be disappointed because I did not do that for this. I know. I thought about I guess 28 or 29 years of my Fish journey, and I can think about touch points in that 1.0 through 4.0 kind of journey that we've been on that I think like helps me put my best show in context.
That sounds great. And also, this is your best show ever. We may be doing the episode on my podcast, but this is your best show ever. It's also your network, so you can do whatever you want. Really, you can come on here and be like, "Fuck you! I want to talk about the Mets." So
yeah, we're going to talk about Ohio State football, and it's going to be great because there's a lot going on. I mean, so you know what I got to like. I'll just start from the early days. So like I was in 97, I was a freshman in college. I was on my own for the first time. I was like living with a few of my friends in a dorm and we had so much fun and I got to go to a bunch of those fall 97 shows. And I went to Dayton on a Sunday night, I'm not sure if it was planned or if it was more spur of the moment, but we went And I went with my girlfriend at the time, whose sister went to Dayton University. So I went to the show and then drove from Dayton to Columbus after the show, and then woke up the next morning, December 8th, and took my first ever college exam, which was in my intro to political science class, which I got an A minus on, which I think is pretty good.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Incredible.
But I like went, you know, got home at two, I got back to my dorm room at 2:30 or something, and got up and took a 9 a.m. exam. But that night still, like, I think going back to the recordings, because we just did a lot of this on Undermine, you know, last year, but I don't know if Dayton holds up in the way that like I experienced it, you know, like I think people appreciate that as like a great show, but it was the atmosphere in that arena was like something that I certainly had never experienced it to date. But like, I think I still looking back on it, I can still picture the crowd. And I've seen a lot of his shows. There are a lot of shows where I can't even really remember much of them. Not because of like anything besides there's just, you know, decreasing space in my brain as I get older. But that,
sure,
that night I can hear it and feel it and see it. And there were like a few huge balloons, you know, bouncing around on the floor. And I was like up on page side and just like, it's all very, very visceral still. And that show was just like, I don't know. I think the time of my life and the time of the tour and the way they were playing, it just was like, it was like anything was possible. You know, I think it was very like, yeah. And anything was possible in life, in music. We ended up after the 8th, on the morning of the 9th, we got up and drove with another friend to State College to go to the show in State College. So like we were able to do whatever we wanted because we were in college, and Phish could do whatever they wanted because it was Fall 97. And that show just still, like, I listen to some of those pieces, and I'm sure you know the show. Like there are parts of that show that just still, it's just insane. Insane. So that's like it's probably the biggest touch point for me of that era. You know, I think that was huge. That might be my best show ever. It certainly was like, it's the biggest highlight of my like first era of Phish, you know?
It's truly one of my favorite shows ever. And when you're in your early 20s and you're in college, yeah, everything is possible. You don't have the responsibilities that you're about to have in a couple of years. And, you know, everything's in front of you. You could be anything that you'd like to be. And you're also, you can do whatever you'd really like. Like nothing's stopping you. And you're also kind of realizing that for the first time. You're like, oh shit, I could just kind of drive down to Dayton, I guess, if I wanted to, or I could go wherever I want.
Yeah.
I got a car.
For the first time
got
ever.
Me.
Yeah. It's just like, you just do whatever you wanted. You know, it was pretty amazing. And that, you know, that was go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, is there anything, I mean, obviously it's a whole bunch of things, the things that you just mentioned, but is there anything that makes that show, like a little bit more visceral than some of those other shows back in from that time or?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was the opening three songs, you know, the AC/DC bag, and they segue into Psycho Killer in like such a just perfect way. And, you know, it was only the second time they played that song, and they just, it was like, it was so seamless and it was so perfect. And then they go right into Jesus Just Left Chicago, you know, into another like really great version of that song. And that was just like, I think that those three songs together kind of capture this tour, you know, where like they could really pretty easily do anything. And like every night there was something amazing happening, and that, you know, and then there, of course, the end of that set, like this is one of the few shows I've ever seen where like, I think the first set is better than the second set, you know, because they end it with this, you know, they reprise the Tube Jam and play Slave. And it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. It felt like it was completely seamless and completely like magical.
I've listened to that first set 10 billion times. I mean, truly. And the first three songs, like you said, probably 20 billion times. I mean, that transition is so seamless. And if those three songs can't lock you into a show early on, then I don't know if this band is for you. 'Cause
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's the best ever.
And so I think, you know, I've seen so many shows in the 1.0 era, and it was, they were all amazing, you know, in different ways. But this, like, really, I just think it captured the era more than anything else that I saw. And if I go back, if I had to rank all the shows I've seen, and again, just Fish, because I think I've seen some amazing non-Fish shows, but if I think about, like, my best show ever, nothing that's non-Fish is going to be in at the very top, you know? I just don't think it's possible. But this one definitely stands out.
There wasn't another Nine Inch Nails show that stuck out to you? You didn't go back? And
I didn't go back, weirdly, you know. I never went back. But I am thankful to my brother for taking me, because, you know, I think he remembers it probably more than I do. And I think he was very excited that you know, that he got to take me to my first show. So and that was, like, the year that I saw my first Fish show. So he kind of, you know, got me started on my concert journey. And then I was thinking about, you know, I don't know, when did you see your first show?
2018. So just a couple years
after yeah.
you.
Yeah. So
right thereafter. So I get it.
Exactly. Now, I liked
it when I was 16, and even younger than that. My older brother was a, you know, huge Fish fan, and had all the every year on LimeWire and everything. And so I listened to everything, but I did not have a crew to go with that was my age. And I was not yet confident enough to roll down to a show by myself. And so it took me far longer than it should have to see a show, for sure. And I'm also young, you know?
Yes. Well, yeah. And
I was a baby.
Yeah, and I'm old. So, you know, like, that's, you know, that's the difference.
Right, right, right.
You know?
Which is what I wanted to talk about next. I'm scared. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know, guys. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we should just call it. I think that was good. You know? I think we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, honestly, for me, if all we're going to talk about is that Dayton show, I would be fine. Because it is truly my favorite show of that era. It's right, so right great. Up there, I would say.
So great.
Yeah.
So the other, like, honorable mention, or I guess there's three, and I don't know what order I'd put them in, but when Fish came back in 2009, I saw a lot of shows because I like felt like I had to, you know. And I went to Hampton, like I did a bunch of the shows when they came back, and that fall I got to see a few shows. And there was a moment in 2009 at the second night of Albany, which is 11/28/09, that was the I think up through that whole year, we were kind of like, all of us were listening and going to shows. And I think we had all been traumatized by, you know, the whole experience of Coventry and what happened in 2004 and the band too. Right. It was like, it was unclear whether they were ever going to be like what they were in the late 90s, you know, and early 2000s. I think there's some great stuff from 2003. But once 2004 came around, it was like, this is not really working for me. I think that's how a lot of people feel about it. But we went to Albany with a friend, my wife and I, and two friends actually. And the second set, opens with Seven Below into Ghost. And there was like a 45 minute, you know, both of these songs together, 45 minutes or so of just amazing improv. And I remember that I was with this guy who was next to me. We smoked a joint with these people next to us, and they kept talking about how this was the Buffalo Kush strain. And we were like, okay, cool, whatever. And then during the Seven Below jam, my friend had to sit down and was sitting in the like chairs on the floor, sitting in his chair with his head in his hands because of the Buffalo Kush, which we still talk about to this day. But it made me, like, during the Seven Below, I was standing on the chair, there were chairs on the floor, and just like losing my mind. Cause I was like, this is it. It's back. Like, we're back. Like, they can still create these moments of just outrageous improv that like blow everyone's mind. And to me, that was like, that is proof that Fish was back, but also like they still had so much more to do creatively. And I think that probably was like a turning point for me. And I'd probably seen 10 or more shows that year, you know, before this. And there had been some highlights and some good shows, but this was the moment where I was like, all right, I'm back. We're all back, you know? That's a sigh of relief. Yeah, exactly. And it definitely sticks out as like one of the best shows I've ever seen, even though if you were to like look at all those shows I've seen, you probably wouldn't like put that up there. But, you know, it was amazing.
Well, with the tension that creates, I mean, this is a band that is so formative for you and so many people. And, you know, the end was so brutal. And they're back in this way. I'm sure there's a level of like, okay, cool. We get to go maybe see Fish a couple more times and then they'll be done forever. And, you know, but at least they're giving us this. And so that's a lot of tension to be released. And so I'm sure when you get to that big jam that night, you're like, okay, we could actually keep seeing this band and they might sustain this and we might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I mean, you know, this 3.0 like era, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of ups and downs in a lot of people's minds, you know, like there's a lot of moments that are like, you know, I don't know, like the online discourse about the band, I think, is pretty different than, you know, what they feel, certainly. But it's totally. Also just, it's a different, totally different experience for, you know, when you're there, obviously.
Yeah, it sounds like they go in between that feeling as well of we're back to this old feeling like we had in the 90s, or we're working through this new, you know, part of our sound, or you'll hear it get brought up like in the Between Me and My Mind documentary when, you know, Paige and Trey are talking about like, you know, it finally feels like we're back. And that's 8 years or 9 years into them actually being back. And so, you know, I'm sure that they go between that all of the time, but it seems like they're having fun. They look like they're having fun.
So. It seems like they're having fun. And I think we're still having fun for the most part. I'm still having fun. Are you still having fun?
I'm having a blast. Yeah. Unapologetic blast. I'll take all the love and light stuff. Trey can he can hit the gas on the corny stuff. I don't even care. Make it cornier. Make it more love and light for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if he's having fun and they're having fun, like they are right now on this tour, then like, it doesn't really matter. Everything else is like, they should do whatever they want.
So, I mean, it's a key to any level of performance. I mean, if you're watching someone as a comedian or a, you know, any sort of performer, and it looks like they're having a good time, you might not even understand the medium, but you know that this is fun for them and that's infectious to you. And I don't think anyone has ever embodied that in my seeing them live ever more than Trey. Trey is a constant reminder to have fun on stage and lead with joy. And so, yeah, I mean, and that hasn't gone away.
Yeah.
Look at last night, you know, they're goofing around and Fishman's on the guitar and you can't tell me there's not joy on that stage.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, but I do think it goes up and down, right? Probably. Like there's probably some time when it just like doesn't hit in the right way or doesn't work and for whatever reason. And then, you know, they just have to, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I wonder how they, if you have a bad set of stand up, how do you try to move on or do you try to like analyze it and figure out how to correct it? What's the easier approach?
I'm better at detaching from it now. When I first started doing comedy in Chicago, I mean, good set or bad set, I'm up all night thinking about everything that I said or every little pause or all that kind of stuff. And so now it's a little less, you know, bad show. Hey, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I do think that's probably how experienced people feel too. Musicians, right?
And Trey again has a little bit more experience on me. Fishman, you know, Paige, Mike, they have a little bit more stage experience than I do, and so I'm sure that's it's good for them. But I, you know, I'll also immediately look to the things in my life, like why, you know, did I get to this space tonight? Why did I bring this sort of energy into the night? You know, could it be, you know, I went through a breakup 2 months ago and I don't feel like I'm fully over it yet. Mm-hmm. Or I, you know, had a bad sandwich for lunch or, you know, whatever it is, I'll immediately be like, what was the deal up there? Why did I bring that sort of energy to it. And I also, I do improv comedy. I don't really do a lot of stand-up scripted stuff. Mm-hmm, and so I'll immediately look to, you know, are the stress of my bills affecting the scene that I'm doing in this improv show? Or, you know, 2022, we saw Fish at Alpine Valley. Alpine Valley is always like the best weekend. We always get a great, you know, if of the summer, it's usually right up there. And in 2022, from all accounts, Fishman had just gone through a breakup. And that was that we had fun, but that was kind of a tough weekend in comparison to other Alpine Valley runs. And so you have to assume that that, you know, is over the band, at least over Fishman. He gets to like have a little bit of a tension release with the broken heart attack at the end of that weekend. But we did leave feeling like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And so, yeah, like you said, it's up and down, even within one tour. You know, it's not like you have solid year, not solid year, solid year. It's night to night. You know, you never know what's going on. So,
yeah, it's an interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think we don't think as much about that. Like in and like the. We talked about Alpharetta on our, on the podcast, Helping Friendly podcast, mostly because like, they just seem to play amazing shows there and there's something.
Yeah. They love it there.
Right. There's something about the, and who knows what the experience is like for them, but there's certainly like a good, there's a good atmosphere there. You know, maybe it's that like the hotel they stay at nearby is just like extra comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
Like the staff, the best team, you know, it's just
the best coffee downstairs or something,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
It could be literally anything.
It's certainly not Trey like looking at Fantasy Tour and wondering what people are thinking he should play. You know, I don't think that's a factor.
Let's just say it right now. Trey is not looking at Fantasy Tour to see what you guys are saying. He doesn't care. He's going to do whatever he's going to do, no matter what. So
Trey knows better. You know?
We'll be right back after a short break.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Good point. Good point. You don't want to upset him. Not at this point. Everything's going great. So don't mess it up, guys.
Don't poke the tray.
Yeah. So you started seeing them in 2018.
Yeah.
Where was that?
First show was the Allstate Arena run. 10/28 was my first show. I had to leave that show. Man, I can't even believe I'm saying this on recording. I had to leave that show early, to get to my midnight show that I was hosting. In the city. Allstate Arena sits outside of Chicago, up in Rosemont. And so we had to like hustle back, and I left during that sand. There's a pro shot sand that they put online right afterwards, like incredible sand. And I had to leave like right during the first verse. And so, but I, you know, I loved the music up until that point. I loved Fish. I obviously am a big improv guy. And so they, there's hardly a band that does it better than them. And I remember being like, to the two guys who I went with, who are guys who have seen hundreds and hundreds of shows at this point, I'm like, so apologetic. I'm like, I am so sorry that we have to leave. This is, I mean, I'm having the best time. We got Reba, you know, they did like Moon Age Daydream at the end of the first set. I was just like loving it. And they were both like, it's all good. I'm going back tomorrow and going back Sunday. Seen them a billion times. It's no worries. And I'm like, I feel like I'm pulling them out of, you know, like the greatest concert of all time.
They're
it's literally fine.
They're like, it's fine. We'll be back. We'll be back. Yeah. I mean,
even to this point,
I know a lot of musicians who go to shows and who play late night shows, and everyone has to leave the show early if you're playing late night, you know? So like, if you're going to see Fish and then you have a Fish after show, you're only seeing half the show no matter what. So like, that's just part of the deal, but maybe half is better than none. I don't know. Can you confirm?
It is. It's definitely better than none. That's for sure. I'll say this. I did an after show for a musician is a very cool thing. I did an improv show at midnight to about 12 people and two of them were asleep. So I, you know, might've been able to skip that one.
Maybe.
I think that would have been fine.
But what if there was something, some like really important lesson that you learned that day? That without it, you know, maybe it wouldn't have worked.
I took it. I was like, I'm going to use the energy for this show and put it into my comedy show. And I don't think that translated. I don't think anyone felt what I was feeling.
The people who were sleeping definitely did not get it.
No.
You know,
they're like, all right, this guy is starry eyed on stage right now. He might as well just go to bed. So,
I wanted to mention 2018, if that's okay with you, just because so in February of 2018, we launched Osiris, and that was a couple years in the making. Tom and I had been working on it and it went through a lot of iterations. And then we finally launched in 2018. And so that year I saw a bunch of shows and did like, we did some pre-show things. We were doing some set break, like live video stuff. We were doing events. We were doing all kinds of, so I saw like a bunch of shows that year. And one of the honorable mentions that I have, and I only have this one and one other, is the last night of Hampton 2018, which was, have you been to Hampton? Are you going to go to Hampton to see Goose? Are you like, you got to go to Hampton?
I'm getting pulled very hard by a couple different friends to go out there. Long Strange Putt, Sean, and Connor are both trying to get me to come out for Goosemas, but we will see. But I haven't been to Hampton yet, no.
So it's just, you know, you know about it. I mean, it's just it's a really pretty magical place to see Phish, and I assumed it to see any other band, really. I mean, they've played there, I think, 21 times over like the course of decades. I mean, it's kind of like it's a really pretty amazing record they have of going there. But the and coming back, you know, in 2009 at Hampton, of course, was really awesome. They had this 3-night run in 2018. We did a live HF pod during the day, one of the days. I mean, it was just like a fun weekend, and we had just launched this company, and so everything was great. And I was also like having a nervous breakdown because I was about to leave I was planning to leave my full-time job to like do Osiris full-time. So at the same time that I was like enjoying this ride, I was also like having a major crisis. So those are like, you know, it's good things to put together. But the last night of the run, which I think is the last time they played there, was my 100th show. And, you know, it's all GA, so you can be with your friends and all that. And I think a couple of people went in early and several people from the internet and then a bunch of my friends. We basically had like an entire section to ourselves. And so it was just really awesome to like look around and like everyone in my section was someone I knew. It was like it was a pretty amazing party. And I didn't know that my friend was going to do this, but my friend Kate made stickers that said it was my 100th show and gave them out to people, which was slightly embarrassing, but also fun because, you know, yeah, Everyone was wearing them. And then, you know, the show, like we get like a double encore, and the More is like one of my favorite songs. It's just like, I'm very unapologetic about More. I think it's an awesome song. And that was the encore. And I think everyone was like, okay, cool. Like, that's fine. I mean, it was a great show. And then they close it out with More. And I think everyone was like, okay, well, that's a dumb encore, but whatever. And I think the bass tech like came out and was going to grab Mike's bass and then like put it back, you know, and like a double encore is just, it's not something that happens. Like, you know, it's extremely rare. So we saw him like put the bass back and we were like, oh shit. And then they played You Enjoy Myself. And it just really was like a, just kind of put it over the edge. Like just an amazing, I don't know how that show holds up like in terms of, you know, rankings for people, but it was just an amazing experience that, you know, kind of represents where I was in life and also just this crazy journey of entrepreneurship and Phish, which is just a pretty, what a weird combination.
It is a weird combination. And I'm sure I'm sure walking away from your professional career to then make your, at the time, hobby and thing that you like, your professional career, there had to be a level of like, what am I doing? I know we got Tom Marshall and, you know, involved. I know I've got this big community. I know all this stuff. No one knows better than you, but I'm sure you're like, what am I doing right now?
Yeah.
I got a family, you know, I've got stuff going on. And also to have a full section of your friends, what a dream. Yeah. I don't know. Depends on who your friends are. Maybe it'd be anyway. That sounds awesome. Like the best.
It was awesome. It was really awesome. And that year ended. This is my last one, I swear. I don't know how many shows I've mentioned, but I think a lot. But I just want to tell you about
you get five. Okay. You get five honorable mentions, but you've done two or three really good ones. So you can do as many as you'd like. RJ.
I think I'll just keep Dayton as the best show ever. So the others can be honorable mentions. The other one I've seen probably 50 or more shows with my wife. We see a lot of shows together, and I've seen a lot of shows without her. But one of the best shows I've seen, and I happened to be with her, and I remember it because, first of all, it was an amazing show. And I'll just tell you. So 12/30/18 MSG. Mm-hmm. We were behind the stage, which I really like at MSG. There's Alumni Blues opener, Mike's Into Glide 2, which is only the second time that had been played, and I was like explaining this to her. It last played in 1995. Week of Pog, Cross-Eyed. I mean, it was just, you know, and then they go back into Week of Pog at the end of the show from a tube into a Week of Pog, back into a tube, and then they end the set with More. Again, we were like, this is awesome. And this show was just 2018. It was, you know, you saw shows, you know, it was, they were, I don't think people think it was like their best year, but I think there was just some really amazing shows. And then the second set had like these, an Everything's Right jam that was great, and a Plasma and a Light that were all awesome. And then Waiting in the Velvet Sea, which is like a song that my wife and I both, you know, it's like one of our songs, and we heard it together at Coventry. We heard it together after Coventry. And this night we were really excited to hear it. And there was this group of like three women behind us, and they started talking during Waiting in the Velvet Sea. And they were just like having a conversation. And my wife turned around and told them to please stop talking. And
there we go.
They were kind of shocked. And then they like started talking again. And then she turned around again. And then like the second time they were like, oh shit, I guess she's serious. So that was really great.
You have to talk about how you've been talking. You have to, after you get told to stop talking, you have to talk about how you were just talking. And so you got to get told twice. Yeah, people who are talking doing a show, they got to get told two times.
That's fair. Yeah. That is fair. Yeah. I mean, you get one chance, you know? So there was I was very proud of her because I think she also wasn't doing it for any other reason than she was like, I'm trying to listen to this song. It's one of my favorite songs. Can you please catch up like outside of this concert?
Yeah. They'll be done in like an hour and a half. You can talk all night.
Yeah.
You got it all. You can.
You talk for the rest of the night. You can talk all night long until the morning.
You can talk all week if you want to, but right now, I'm here with my husband and we're watching Waiting in the Velvet Sea.
Yeah, so don't fuck with the Velvet Sea. It was a really great night. They ended the second set with a Split Open and Melt, which was just weird and you know, just really great show. And that, I was looking back at these shows before we recorded, and I realized that is probably one of my favorite shows that I've ever seen. And I don't think that I would have necessarily like said that unless I'd gone back and looked at a bunch of the shows. So thank you for letting me go back to these.
That's part of the fun. I think that going back and, you know, that stuff is a little, you know, you don't have to do all that stuff, but it is fun to go back and, you know, rethink some of these shows. And it sounds like another show with an incredible first set, just a ripper of a first set.
Yeah, maybe that's a theme. Maybe I just like really good first sets, you know?
Yeah. You could take or leave a second set.
Yeah, you know.
You usually gotta get out of there anyway.
Nothing really happens, you know. I'm more of like a getting to the dance club for the second set kind of person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, what are they going to do? Improvise? They do that every show. Like,
yeah, don't need it.
Cool.
Don't need it. That's what I got. I don't know. How do you feel about how that went?
So, you know, as a guy, as a younger fan who has only seen 3.0 and 4.0 shows, I just recorded with Meg too. And mm-hmm. she also had 3.0 shows in there. And that makes me feel great. The fact that the energy is good enough to even mention on the podcast in comparison to, you know, she's talking about Europe shows. You're talking about the show I've probably listened to more than any other Fish show ever, in the Dayton show. And you're stacking them with, you know, these 3.0 shows that I could have seen, or, you know, tours that I was at. For me, it's great. I'm sure there's going to be people who are like, what about 98?
Yeah.
What about 99?
I'm bringing them on. You know what I mean? I'm ready. I want to hear. Well, I want to hear. Mean,
how do yell you, at me. As we've gone, yeah, yell at RJ a little bit more. I don't think enough of you guys take I don't think enough of you guys take shots at RJ, to be honest.
Yeah. So. I think it would be better if we had more yelling, please.
Yeah. Pick on someone your own size.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, as you went from 2009 through 2018, you know, how do you feel like the consistency, or like the, you know, we talk about playing with joy and, you know, playing good shows and stuff. Do you feel like there's been a progression like you could have seen, like from 95 to 99, or?
That is a good, that's a great, yeah, that's a great question. I think that, I think there's like a correct answer, and then there's like a, well, I think the correct, I do think there's a right answer, which is that I think in 95 to 99, I think they were on this path that really was like the formative path for them. You know what I mean? And I think Trey kind of said as much in our interview with him for Undermine. He said that like when he thinks about the 97, he immediately goes back to like 93. As like when he thought that it was like really flowing in the way that most Fish fans would say Fall 97 was, because I think for them, I think Trey said this in our interview, like he felt like they were doing something every day that no other band could do. So like, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty amazing. I think like that 93 to 97 probably period was like really pretty. They were forming their own history at the time. I think now they're like they care about their future, obviously. And I don't think they care about their legacy really at this point. I think they care about like just making new good music. And I do think the new music is like the lifeblood of the experience. You know, I think like people will complain about new songs and whatever, but like it makes the improv better. It makes them better. I think it makes the experience better. So I think there's still like these kind of bumps in as they introduce new material and kind of like get more inspired, you know? I don't know. I think like to me, it's like always like this tour, for example, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to some shows. Like, I don't know. I've seen Fish for a long time. Like, maybe I only need to see like a couple shows, you know, it'll be fine. And then you see the first like five shows, like they've been playing this tour, and you're like, can't wait to see Fish again. So it's pretty cool. I feel like there's been,
I mean, that,
you know, there's just like, they come back with it. And then like, even people I know who are extremely jaded are like, you know, excited to see shows this summer. So like, I love that they keep proving people wrong in that sense, because they're never good to just come out and like play their greatest hits. It's just not how they're made, and it's never going to happen. So if they're still feeling inspired, then it's going to come through.
Yeah. And feeling inspired comes from them being excited about the new music. I mean, you said that a little while ago on Twitter, is that that's the key to seeing the Fish that we're seeing right now. I think, you know, like my dad was, is a massive Rush fan, saw every tour from like 77, 76, all the way until they wrapped it up. And he saw the last show and everything. And that is the closest comparison to the, you know, the Fish arc, because you know, they're three guys who stay together the whole entire time. They really don't take themselves that seriously. There's a lot of goofs. There's a lot of jokes going on stage that are for them. You know, the fans will like them, but those jokes that Rush would do, those are kind of just for them. They thought it was funny. And same thing with Fish. You know, if Trey wants to lay down and bend the mic down and do Big Black Furry Creature from Mars from his back, he's doing that because he would like to do that. It's not like, oh, this will be it is a fun thing for the fans. But the other thing about Rush is they kept putting out albums. You know, there'd be like Snakes and Arrows or Clockwork Angels or any of these older albums where newer, older albums where that music is great. And there was probably a lot of Rush fans there that were like, man, I really want to see Limelight. But the reason why you're getting to see Limelight or 2112 or whatever that night is because they've got this new music that they're excited about. And then they're able to still find new pockets within these older tunes. And so that's the clearest, you know, comparison I see to Fish. And they keep putting out new music and it's great. I mean, I'm loving these new songs.
Yeah, I do think that's like the, you know, the peaks that I've seen in 3.0, 2013, 2017. 2017 didn't have as much new material, but that was just like the Baker's Dozen kind of environment, you know. But it's kind of like new material, new situations that allowed them to kind of reconnect in different ways. And I think that's, I mean, I maybe it's sort of like a, maybe it's sort of like a couple, you know, you're married for like 40 years. You got to figure out new things to do to kind of like keep things fresh. You know, I feel like that, I don't know, maybe it's different than that, but that's what it feels like to me. They're like, you know, they're bringing in new stuff, which I think gives them an appreciation for each other and for the community. And it's just like, we're just, you know, it seems very silly to say, but like, it's just, we're just really lucky, you know?
I feel that way as a fan who didn't get to see anything in the 90s. I feel so, I mean, every show that before the show, I'm like, man, I can't believe we get to see Fish. And after the show, I'm like, I can't believe we just got to see Fish every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just feeling so lucky. What they do is still inspiring young bands, and they're pushing these younger bands further too. I think that, you know, the Goose Fish relationship or the perceived relationship that people see, like, you know, they're doing, Fish is still doing so well. And it's got to give a band like a, you know, Goose or, you know, Eggy or Disco Biscuits or Dogs in a Pile. It's got to give them hope. Like, we could really make this last for the rest of our lives. We could really commit to this and commit to each other and commit to our music, and we can make this work for 40 years.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope that it's okay that this turned into a complete new Fish podcast episode.
RJ, I want to talk about Fish with you. That's bottom line. That's what I wanted to do. But just to confirm, for the sake of the, you know, theme of the podcast, you're saying that that Dayton show is your best show ever.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it is.
It'd be high praise to put a show ahead of that, especially a 3.0 show would be.
Yeah. Especially given like this, just the situation I was in and the like memory of it, that combined with the amazing show itself, you know, it's gotta be at the top.
When you left that show, was there a part of you that did, was there any part of you that felt like you're going to see this band for another 30 years?
I have no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I even knew what was happening like the next, you know, week really. So
yeah,
I didn't have very good, like long-term, you know, vision at that point, but I do think I was looking forward to the next show, which was like 2 days later. So I think that's like where my focal point was, you know?
And that's what it should be. We do that now because Fish has been so good for so long, and because we had the Dead for so long, people are like, oh, what's this going to mean in 2060?
Yeah.
You know, when you leave a show now,
right.
Which is unfair. Right. It's weird. It's a weird, unfair thing to do to any band. How about tonight was good, you know?
Right. Right. Exactly. Tonight. Exactly. Yeah. Man, this was fun. Thank you.
Thanks so much for doing it, RJ. Do you have any shows coming up that you're excited about?
That's a great, really good question. I am going to see Fish at the Man next week, which will be fun. I think after that, I'm TBD on a bunch of stuff in the fall, but that's it. That's all I got coming up.
RJ, have fun at those shows. Thanks so much for doing the episode.
Thanks.
It's so good to talk to you.
Thanks for doing this and congrats on getting it going.
We're gonna try to keep it going. Thanks so much for helping me out with it, man.
Yeah, man.
This is RJ's mic, by the way. If you're watching the video, this is the equipment belongs to RJ.
It's your mic now, Cam.
That was the best show ever. That was the best show ever. That was the best show ever. That was the best show.
Man, there was fucked up stuff in there.
Yeah, what the fuck was that about?
All right, well, that was a little bit of music from Jesus and Fartfinger, but also a really great conversation with RJ. So happy that he was able to get on the podcast and talk to me about his Fish shows. The fact that there's some 3.0 shows in there means that we're still doing okay. It means that I'm still doing okay. I didn't miss out on too much in the 90s. Who am I kidding? I missed out on a ton in the 90s, but really good to talk to RJ. If you like this episode, there's more episodes coming out. So keep an eye out for those. But until next time, have a great show.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with.
The way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.